This is Fresh Air. Anne Hathaway has made many rom-coms in her career, but none that take a turn like the one in her latest film, Colossal. She plays an alcoholic writer who returns to her hometown, where she reconnects with a childhood friend played by Jason Sudeikis, and discovers that she's somehow linked to a monster terrorizing South Korea. Our film critic David Edelstein has this review.
In the opening of Colossal, a little girl in a South Korean park sees a huge Godzilla-like monster, only slightly goofier looking. Then a title says, 25 years later, and we're in New York, where a hungover, unemployed woman named Gloria, played by Anne Hathaway, wakes up amid the debris of a party and staggers home to her handsome boyfriend, who throws her out. So, you ask, what's the connection between a monster in Asia and a 30-ish Manhattan drunk a quarter century on? It's two different movies, and two different kinds of movie. What I like about Colossal is that the Spanish writer-director Nacho Vigalondo has an elastic notion of genre. This is a film that starts off as a giddy comedy before plunging into a grim psychodrama about a woman's loss and recovery of power over herself and abusive males, that also happens to feature goofy-looking giant monsters throwing each other around Korea. The link between these two disparate elements is both a surprise and the movie's very premise, which means, to avoid spoilers, I'm going to have to tread more carefully than a friendly dinosaur in a kiddie park, meaning I don't want to squash anyone, but I gotta provide some entertainment. The bulk of Colossal takes place in Gloria's hometown, where she moves into her old family house that's apparently stood empty for years. Literally empty. She buys an air mattress, but is so drunk she passes out on it without blowing it up. Help comes in the form of Jason Sudeikis as Oscar, a nerdy guy who clearly had a crush on her as a kid and now can play savior. He shows up with a TV set after they share a drunken night at the dive bar he inherited from his dad.
So you don't remember anything we talked about last night, huh?
I got really melodramatic, didn't I?
Well, I told me that you weren't really on a vacation, that you've been looking for a job for a year, and you've been living with your boyfriend, Tim, and didn't work out. And since you didn't have any money, you decided to move back here for a little while. For the record, I figured out that you were broke on my own, so you don't have to feel bad about it.
Oh, well, yeah. Congratulations. Is there anything else?
I told you that if you wanted to give me a hand at the bar, you're more than welcome. You'll make a little money while you were staying here.
What did I say?
You said yes. Yeah. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have asked you when you're drunk. That's bad timing by me.
What are you talking about? It's such a nice thing to do, but, I mean, do you need help at the bar?
If this mess keeps going on, yeah, I'll definitely need help at the bar. I've got a drink.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to work at the bar if you agree that we clean up the western side.
Mm-hmm. All right, you're hired.
That's an interesting scene for several reasons. First, the wing of the bar Gloria mentions is a ruin, and so the movie primes you for an upbeat, let's clean up the mess of our lives scenario that doesn't exactly play out. Second, Sudeikis' Oscar is right on the border between endearing and stalkerish. Rescue fantasies are a staple of rom-coms, where unstable princesses often end up with nerdy guys. But director Nacho Vigalondo has more subversive ideas. Gloria's all-night beer binges with Oscar and two dysfunctional pals, played by Tim Blake Nelson and Austin Stowell, are larkish but also creepy, because these people are addicts in an emotional limbo. Something's not quite right. As for the monster in Colossal, it appears again in Seoul. The sightings 25 years ago were unconfirmed, and this time it's a worldwide news event. The creature is on TV, and looking puzzled. it scratches its head in a way that reminds Gloria of herself when she's nervous and perplexed. That's not a spoiler, since the film's poster shows Hathaway and the monster in an identical silly pose, mysteriously in sync in their bewilderment. At first, the connection is hilarious, a riot in two senses, given the pandemonium in Korea. Then things get dark, as we realize these giant monsters, there's one more that arrives, are avatars in a story of domestic abuse, addiction, and buried childhood trauma. I wish I could say those disparate elements totally gel. Anne Hathaway is giving such a delightful screwball performance that when she turns dour, the air goes out of the movie, and the pacing of the last sequence is positively funereal. But given the seriousness of the story, a woman battling her own demons as well as a violent male, I don't know how Vigilando could have lightened the tone. And I love the setup of Colossal so much that I forgive it almost everything. It demonstrates that even the dumbest genres can be used to profound ends, not cheapening serious things, but kicking them to the next metaphoric level. A woman finding her inner strength is inspiring, but a woman finding her inner giant monster who kicks butt, that's just so cool.
David Edelstein is film critic for New York Magazine. Monday on Fresh Air, we'll talk about how healthcare became big business. My guest will be Elizabeth Rosenthal, author of An American Sickness, which explains how the pricing and billing of medical services, devices, and prescription drugs became so complicated, even some doctors don't understand it. She's the editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News. Before becoming a journalist, she was a physician. I hope you'll join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham, with additional engineering support from Joyce Lieberman and Julian Hertzfeld. Our associate producer for online media is Molly C.V. Nesper. Teresa Madden directed today's show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from AMC, presenting their new original series, The Sun, starring Pierce Brosnan, a multi-generational saga depicting the birth and rise of oil, Texas, and America. Premieres tomorrow at 9, 8 Central on AMC. And from Visiting Angels, professional caregivers assisting adults at home in bathing, dressing, meals, and light housework nationwide. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Learn more at 1-800-365-4189. This week on All Things Considered, when the U.S. entered World War I 100 years ago this week, the country was full of German Americans.
During the 1850s, 900,000, almost a million Germans went to the United States, and that's at a time when the German population was only about 40 million.
What happened to their culture, plus the effect of fentanyl on the opioid epidemic? Listen to All Things Considered every afternoon.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, on Forum at 360, Joel Curtis of the National Weather Service runs down the science of tsunamis and how we prepare and respond. At 9, American Forum analyzes urgent issues of the Trump administration and how our deep political divisions might be healed. This is America and the World follows at 9:30. Gavel Alaska is back at 10. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Good afternoon. It's a Friday afternoon here on one of the most fun weeks of the year. It's Folk Fest week here in Juneau. It's also First Friday, so we've got a big show for you coming up, including the Hannah Yoder Band is here. Nora Laughlin will be here to talk about free tax preparation help. We might get a visit from the guest dance caller, Susie Kendig. We'll see. We're also going to get a preview of Saturday's Alaska Originals concert at 360 by the Lost Lakers. And Kate Troll has a new book out, and she's going to be doing a book signing tonight for First Friday. We'll talk to her about that as well. It's all coming up, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and so much more right here on a Juneau afternoon. But first, here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of South Dakota hosted a conference on gun violence on the Pine Ridge Reservation Thursday. As Jim Kent reports, the U.S. Attorney plans to work closely with the Oglala Sioux Tribe to combat crime on the reservation.
Residents of the Pine Ridge Reservation saw 17 murders on their tribal land in 2016. That's almost double the amount of the previous year. U.S. Attorney Randy Seiler met with law enforcement officers, support service staff, and Pine Ridge community members to talk about those incidents. Although he couldn't go into details on the individual Pine Ridge cases.
What I can tell you, in the overwhelming majority of cases, the perpetrator and the victim were both Indian. The victim and the defendant knew each other. The majority were not drug-related. Most have been solved, and the ones that have not been solved are being actively and vigorously investigated, and that in each instance we've identified an assailant that has been indicted, prosecuted, and is either pled guilty or is awaiting trial.
Seiler says the key to solving crimes is community participation. It's for this reason he's opening an office on the Pine Ridge Reservation, effective immediately. Oglala Sioux Tribal President Scott Weston welcomes the increased presence by the U.S. Attorney's Office.
It's huge. We are going to open a new door because it's about the safety of our children and our elders and everybody across the board. We need to start being aggressive with this.
At the same time, both Weston and the U.S. Attorney are assuring the public that the Pine Ridge Reservation is at least as safe as anywhere else in the country. I'm Jim Kent.
Pacific Coast tribal commercial and sports fishing communities are concerned about this year's salmon season as they wait for a final decision by regulators. Native and non-native communities are preparing for a near-total closure of California and Oregon's coast. According to regulators, returns of spawning Klamath River fall Chinook are projected to be the lowest on record in 2017. Contributing factors include drought, disease, and poor ocean conditions. Tribal people worry they'll have little to no salmon for the first time in history. Amy Cordalis is general counsel for the Yurok Tribe in California. She's also a tribal member and fisher.
The people in the community are devastated. People are coming to our offices, to the tribal government office, in shock. There's a lot of tears. There's a lot of questions about how am I going to feed my family? How am I going to keep my lights on? People are in distress.
Cordalis says fish are also an important part of tribal culture.
That great sense of community will be absent. And for us, what that means is our very social fabric is falling apart. And we are a community, unfortunately, that already suffers from very high unemployment rates, very high poverty rates. About 80% of the reservation residents live below the poverty line. So we struggle with drug and alcohol problems. And when you take away the very core of our social fabric, which is salmon, those problems are just going to be exacerbated. It's a social justice issue for us, but it's also just a way, you know, survival issue. And we're literally talking about trying to preserve our historic way of life.
Cordalis says the tribe is working with its neighbors to restore waters and fish. Plans include dam removal. The Pacific Fisheries Management Council is meeting through next week, and a final decision is likely to be released in the next few days. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by BNSF Railway Company, supporting science, technology, and engineering careers through a partnership with the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. BNSF STEM scholarships available at AISES.org/scholarships.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes the Gathering of Nations 2 Expo New Mexico, April 28th and 29th. Information on services and the Gathering of Nations at siabq.org.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
Support for this program comes from the Prospector Hotel. The hotel is pet-friendly and features non-smoking accommodations, an on-site restaurant, and parking. Reservations at 586-3737 or prospectorhotel.com.
The Hannah Yoder Band with Andy. That's a song that's not about me, as far as I know, Hannah. But it's a wonderful song, and it's an example of great stuff that's on this CD, the Hannah Yoder Band's Something Good, which is really cool music. Thanks for coming in, you guys. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You guys, have you been to Juneau before?
Yeah.
Oh, have you? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think this is our third year.
Oh, all right. Okay. Very cool. Very cool. So, and what keeps bringing you back?
It's fun.
Yeah, it is fun, right? It's such a great week.
Yeah.
Here, you know, we always look forward to this week every year. The Folk Fest awesome. Is such a cool thing. Yeah.
I was just assuming this is what Juneau is like all the time.
It is.
So
it totally is.
I came here when I was a kid. I was like, man, Juneau's so cool.
Yeah, especially October. Yeah. Yeah, no, it can get different, but it's a good week. Well, can we just go around the room, maybe introduce the folks in the band here?
Yeah.
Hannah, yeah.
Do you want to introduce yourself, or do you want me to introduce you?
You can go.
Silas Hoffman in the corner with the upright bass.
The huge bass over there, yeah.
You want to
I'm Aurora Bowers.
And you're on fiddle?
That's correct. I'm on the fiddle.
All right.
I'm carrying a fiddle.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, or you're just... They gave me one. I don't know what to do with it. But.
My name's Forrest Wilson, playing a small guitar.
Okay.
And I'm Jason Sear on the egg shaker here.
Percussion. And then and Hannah, you're guitar
Hannah.
And lead vocals and also great. Banjo. Play some banjo as
yep.
well.
I'm here.
Yeah,
banjo.
Right. Well, tell me a little bit about what inspired you to go into this line of music, into this type of stuff. Yeah.
Really good question. I guess I grew up with bluegrass and kind of Americana stuff. My parents were really into it. My dad played banjo and guitar.
What part of the country you guys from?
Actually from Hope, which is a little south of Anchorage. So that's where my sister and I grew up. And my dad and my mom talked us into, they kind of tricked us. They told us if we started taking music lessons, they'd take us to this music festival in Seattle the next year. So we did, and that was that. We were like 13.
It's like a good trick.
Yeah, it was a good trick. It worked out well.
That's a smart parent trick right there. I like that one.
Yeah.
And so how long have you been doing it? You've been doing it for a while, huh?
I've been playing guitar since I was like 13.
Yeah.
So I can't even do math.
So
for a long time.
Or, you know, five, 6 years now. Yeah.
But we've been together like in this formation, I don't know, 2 years? Ish?
Just over a year? I mean, almost. And I've been here, yeah.
Silas and I have gone through a few Hannah Yoder Band configurations, but this is the best one.
Were you really strategic about how you wanted the instrumentation to happen? Did you? Is that something that?
No, it just kind of happened.
It just kind of happened because of who you were playing with and stuff?
I think we were pretty strategic, actually.
Were we? Yeah. I feel like we had a show one time, and it was going to be me and Silas, and so we playing the mandolin, and Silas shows up, and he's like, hey, my friend wants to play the drums. Let's get him on stage. And
It's my inception technique, so.
It's like, drums, radical,
yeah.
Right? Wow,
yeah.
Drums. Yeah.
Sometimes we have a banjo, a dobro. Yeah,
very cool. Well, do you guys mind playing a tune off of this
CD?
This is Something Good. This is available, obviously, from you guys and at the Folk Fest right now. And it's really beautiful music. And what are you going to play?
The RV song.
All right, cool.
About a motorhome.
Here's the Hannah Yoder Band with the RV song off of Something Good.
Don't go crazy.
When Harvey ran the city and Bundy made his last game, baseball was king, but Jimmy Carter ran the world still. No one forgot to change the oil. Though the rivers and the highways and the junkyards come between us, hillsides are rolling like mountains in the east. Drive all night till you can't see where we are. We'll make a map around the Texas shore.
That awkward part where I'm the only guy in the room clapping. But I'm sure if there are other people here, they'd be clapping too. That was really wonderful. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
That was really a fantastic song. And tell me about where you're playing and how people might be able to see you this week.
We're playing, what are we doing? Tonight we're playing at 7:15
okay.
over at Centennial Hall, and then at 10 at the Red Dog.
Okay.
So playing there tonight with the Norris Bowers Band.
Cool. You got other gigs this week or?
Like in Juneau?
Yeah.
No.
Are you out of here then?
We're leaving Sunday. Actually I'm playing at the Rockwell tomorrow night with like Annie and Kat. And
okay.
Me, so
all right. Cool.
Doing that. But yeah, tonight the Red Dog.
All
big
right.
Party.
Yeah, yeah, the big party,
big
and of
party.
Course at the on the main stage
yeah.
there at 7:15 tonight as well. Do you guys have, I mean, I didn't kind of spring this on. Do you have one more in you?
Sure.
You want to play another one? I mean, I'd love to just hear another. That was so awesome.
Yeah.
And I love being a mixer. You know,
yeah.
I like this.
We can manage one more.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So this is off of Something Good. How long has this one been out? Is this brand new?
It came out in November.
Okay.
So actually, last year when we were here, we were just getting ready to go down to record it.
What was that process like? Was that?
We went down to Hope with Evan Phillips, and we stayed at a friend's cabin for like 5 days and recorded most of it live. Had everybody in different rooms and
really just hung up blankets and
yep.
all that stuff.
And
yeah, the Wilco approach.
Yeah,
I like it.
Really
yeah,
cool.
Right. Bathroom.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Well, very cool. Well, that's awesome, man. Yes, recording down home. So, which one are we going to hear?
All I Need.
Here comes All I Need, and another one off of this fairly new album from the Hannah Yoder Band, Something Good. It's available over at the Folk Fest, and these guys are playing tonight at 7:15, and then over at the Red Dog tonight later on. So, check them out. Here they are, the Hannah Yoder Band.
Well, I could tell you all about all the things that I've done, all the games I play, but I have never won. Got a list of things to do and people to meet and places to go and the things that I'll see.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you.
That's the Hannah Yoder Band playing tonight at 7:15 and on the main stage in Centennial for the Folk Fest, and then over at the Red Dog for the party.
For the party.
For
yep.
the after party, mm-hmm. for the fun happening tonight at the Red Dog, Friday at the Red Dog.
Yeah.
Folk Fest. That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Hannah and the whole band, thanks so much for coming.
Yeah.
You guys appreciate it so much. Here's another one off of their brand new CD. It's called Something Good is the name of the CD, and this one is the title cut, Something Good. Thanks again, you guys.
Thank you.
My
just blamed it all on you.
Troll.
They sounded great.
Weren't they great?
Yeah.
You're a huge fan of
big
music
fan of
and all
fest.
That. Yeah, folk fests.
Man.
Doing it for a long time, right? Yeah.
Yep. Raised my children on folk
fests. Yeah,
fest.
That's right. Aaron's there now, and yep, doing all that stuff. So, Kate Troll is here. She is the author of the new book, The Great Unconformity, and you've got a book signing happening as part of First Friday tonight.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, I'm the non-musician.
You're right.
Sneaking in on Folk Fest here.
Just, if you just need a little music, non-musical moment, just go over and the book signing is happening over at Hearthside Books. So, Kate, tell me a little bit about this book. What's kind of we talked about it a couple weeks ago, but tell me again and just kind of remind people what we were trying to accomplish with this book.
Right. The one sentence description of the book is that it's an adventure memoir wrapped up in the global events of sustainability and climate change. So I have dedicated this book to the millennial generation, trying to inspire them to continue on the good fight. And I do it through storytelling. And I wrap up policy insights into my personal adventure stories here in Alaska.
It is interesting how, you know, we feel so far removed often in Alaska from the rest of the policy world and all that stuff, but we're so actually intricately involved and meshed with it.
Yeah.
So we can be out kayaking and enjoying everything nature has to offer, but you have to remember that the reason that's there is because there's been a lot of history behind why our natural environment is the way it is in Alaska,
right,
and those kinds
right.
of things.
Right, right. And it's what has sustained my work over the 22-some years, you know, because we all have to get recharged.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's so much of why so many people live here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of which and speaking of your work, I know that you've got maybe a couple of passages that you've thought of that maybe people would be interested in hearing, so it'd be great to hear a reading from your book.
Oh, thank you, Andy.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, there's lots of adventures in the book, and this is an adventure where my girlfriends and I from Ketchikan are kayaking in Glacier Bay, and we think we're in really calm inside waters, and it turns out to have been my most harrowing kayaking experience. And we have to go retrieve our friend who's being brought up on a different boat, so we have no choice but to head out into difficult waters. That's the backdrop, okay? All right, so here, reading from the book. In launching the kayaks, Rosie offered to paddle the double with the empty bow seat. She was certainly strong enough. However, we needed to add ballast to her bow to keep it from bouncing around in the waves. Everything needed to be snug. We cinched our spray skirts as tightly as possible to prevent the waves that would be breaking over our bows from filling the kayaks with water. We needed to wear our kayaks as much as possible by bracing our knees against the sides. Hip control would be essential in paddling through the big water ahead. As soon as we poked our heads out of the cove into the inlet, we were slammed by 3 to 4 foot waves. Heads down, we stroked hard. With the backwash off the rocks, waves started coming from 3 directions. The waves head-on were building to 6 feet. Angling to avoid the building waves meant taking some of the backwash on our stern. Surfing down a wave, Nancy, in the stern of my boat, let out a big yee-haw. I heard Rosie scream the same. Yee-haw, I joined in. As I did, I felt my fear lessen. I relaxed the power grip I had on my paddle. Well into the mixing bowl, Rose's kayak began to go up and over the waves instead of slicing through the crest. Without enough ballast, she had a hard time controlling the kayak, suddenly at risk of capsizing if a wave pushed her broadside. Nancy and I tried to stay inside of Rosie at all times. No more yeehaws. We had now come abreast of Clinkin Point. When we turned 90 degrees toward shore, we would momentarily be broadside to the waves. Our timing would be critical. On the next wave, I screamed to Rosie. She came back into view on the crest of an intervening wave. I saw her snap her hips and turn her bow just as the water rushed over it. She slipped down into the next trough. She signaled, "I'm okay," with her paddle. Nancy and I strove with mad intent. We turned, ruddered hard, and backpaddled. A wave buried Nancy in the stern. She braced with her paddle. I gave 3 hard strokes, and we were momentarily clear of danger. There's more to that. You gotta buy the book to see where it goes. But anyway, that's what
I've been
trying
there.
To do.
I haven't been in that harrowing point. When you said 6-foot waves, I thought, okay, wow. Yeah.
I mean, we all have, I'm sure many people listening could touch or relate to a story like that.
We've all been on these kind of, you kind of go on overnights or multiple day trips, and then, you can leave during nice weather, but at some point you may not be in nice weather, then you have to be really smart.
We had no choice.
Yeah, you have to be smart and skilled and all those things, and it all comes to bear. Now, how do you relate that situation, a harrowing story, how do you relate that specific situation to some of the policy things that you also follow?
Well, the title in that chapter is called Turbulent Waters,
okay.
And so it also parallels a difficult time that I was going through professionally. So I get back into that stream of mine. And of course, I also talk about ocean acidification and some of the perils that are out in the water.
Yeah.
So,
I like that term you use, the mixing bowl.
Right.
You know, you're really in it.
Those are the tough ones.
Yeah, so,
and,
exactly.
And politically, I've been in lots of mixing bowls.
Yeah.
I mean, there's... So I use a
when
lot
you wade
of,
in, you know,
and I wade
you gotta,
in, right.
You gotta, right, exactly.
I try
right.
not to overdo the metaphors, but they
sure.
certainly help in moving the story forward.
Yeah, absolutely. The book is called The Great Unconformity. It's Reflections on Hope in an Imperiled World, and it's by Kate Troll. You're going to be doing a book signing tonight, 5:00 to 7:00 over at Hearthside Books downtown, all part of First Friday. So as people are walking around and checking out all the great stuff, and it's beautiful weather to be walking
and
around
right in
today.
Between, Folk Fest really gears up at 7:00.
That's right.
So stroll by, buy a book, head to Folk Fest.
Right. Buy a couple of blocks of, little cubes of cheese. Always
yes,
good.
Always good along the way.
Right.
Always good. Yeah.
First Friday happening. Well, Kate, thanks so much for coming.
And
thanks
thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for reading a passage. It's again, The Great Unconformity. It's a brand new book by local author Kate Troll, Reflections on Hope in an Imperiled World. And so fun to hear a little passage of it there. Thanks again, Kate. Here's now Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
All right.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 7th of April, 2017. It's the birthday of the filmmaker Francis Ford Coppola, born in Detroit, 1939, raised in New York City, contracted polio when he was just 9 years old, bedridden for long periods of time through his childhood, when he liked to stage puppet shows and later shot 8mm home movies. First job in the movie business, working for the horror movie director Roger Corman. He worked as a cameraman, director on the second unit. He was 29 when he started working on The Godfather. He was broke, he had a family to support, and he did not care for the novel by Mario Puzo, which was the basis of the movie. And he had arguments with the studio, which wanted to set the movie in the 70s, so they wouldn't have to pay for cars and clothes from the 40s. And they didn't like his casting of Al Pacino and Marlon Brando, but Coppola prevailed. The movie was a great hit, and he used his profits from it to get into the wine business. It's the birthday of Billie Holiday, born Eleanora Fagan in Philadelphia, 1915. She grew up listening to Louis Armstrong and Bessie Smith. She went off, got a job with Count Basie's band, and then with Artie Shaw. It's the birthday of the author Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, born Minneapolis, 1890, a crusader for the preservation of the Florida Everglades. Her book, Everglades, River of Grass, came out in 1947. And it's the birthday of William Wordsworth, born in Cumberland in the Lake District of Northwest England in 1770. His parents died when he was young. He and his brothers and sisters split up among relatives. He didn't see his sister Dorothy for 9 years, but when they were reunited, they stayed together for life. She became his best companion, his housekeeper, his transcriber, his sounding board, and he even took some lines from her journals, which he used in his famous poem, I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud. Wordsworth was a good friend of the poet Coleridge, and they took long walks together in the Lake District, talking about philosophy and about poetry. They set out to change the course of English poetry by deformalizing it and including the language of conversation in it. And they came out with the book Lyrical Ballads, which was a great sensation. One critic said the book was like turning up fresh soil. Here's a poem for today by William Wordsworth. It is a beauteous evening, calm and free, the holy time is quiet as a nun, breathless with adoration. The broad sun is sinking down in its tranquility, the gentleness of heaven broods o'er the sea. Listen, the mighty being is awake and doth with his eternal motion make a sound like thunder everlastingly. Dear child, dear girl, that walkest with me here, if thou appear untouched by solemn thought, thy nature is not therefore less divine. Thou liest in Abraham's bosom all the year, and worshipest at the temple's inner shrine, God being with thee when we know it not. William Wordsworth's poem, It is a Beauteous Evening, Calm and Free. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Thank you to everyone who gave during our spring member drive and to all of our sustaining members who helped bring in $77,000 since January. If you meant to contribute but didn't get a chance, you can do so now at ktoo.org. Your investment returns every day in the programming you love. You are the public in media, and we can only do this with your help. Thank you.
The Boogie Ceremony. They're worshiping Kali.
Zomity dum, zomity dum, zomity dum, zomity dum. Soon, Kali Ma will listen to Bridge from Nowhere.
A weekly show where we talk about living in Alaska.
This Sunday at 8 p.m. on KTOO 104.3.
Soon,
Jones.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you on this beautiful Friday afternoon, first Friday and the Friday of Folk Fest. It's a great day here in Juno in the capital city. Nora Laughlin has joined us now to talk a little bit about, well, maybe one of the less pleasant things that you have to do every year, which is get your taxes together. But Nora, it sounds like because of the AARP Foundation and your work, it can be a little bit easier for folks. They can go get some free tax preparation help.
Well, that's our aim, is to make it
even pleasant. Believe
really?
It or not, yes.
I don't know. That's a tough goal.
if I can make somebody laugh while we're doing it, that is a goal. But we only got 4 days left that we're working at the Nugget Mall on Mondays and Saturdays, and we hope you will get there sooner rather than later because we hate to run out of time. We only work for about 4 hours at a time because it is exhausting. We do the taxes right there, right in front of you. And when you walk out the door, you're done.
So you just bring in your folder of stuff, right?
As long as you've brought the stuff with you, you need to bring in. And vital is bringing in your Social Security card. We need to get that off there, not just out of your memory, but we need to get it off the card or from something with a Social Security letterhead.
Okay.
If you get Social Security, that's fine. It's them saying, this is your name and this is your Social Security number. So,
and you need that in, because you're tax preparers and need to prove that the person is,
part of the reason is because of identity theft has gotten rampant.
Okay, right.
So we need to see the card, and believe it or not, the primary reason is not because people don't know their number. It's because they don't know their name on their Social Security card. And the IRS really likes taxes to be the same name as the name on the Social Security card.
I see.
So
if you leave out an initial 1 year or something like that, or...
I don't know how serious it would be, but test it?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Don't give them a red flag
no.
if you don't need to. Yeah.
If you can't find your card, there is an office in the federal building you can go to, and their hours are very short, but and get a letter from them, from the Social Security Administration, in essence, saying this is your name and this is your Social Security number.
So you were bringing up one important point right before we got on the air, which is that April 15th is always the date that we think about taxes being due. But there's a couple of caveats to that this year, right?
There are. The 15th falls on a Saturday, and we will be working on the 15th doing taxes. And but they're not due the 15th this year, and the reason is because it is not a work day, so that generally would fall on the next work day, which would usually be the following Monday, but the following Monday, the 17th, is actually a holiday in Washington, D.C. Only in Washington, D.C. you still need to go to work, but we will be doing taxes on Monday, the 17th, because taxes are not due until midnight the 18th this year.
So Tuesday, the 18th at midnight. At midnight Alaska time?
Right. That's the first weekday, working day for Washington, D.C.
I see.
After
interesting.
Taxes are due.
Right.
So please come down and let us help you. We do enjoy helping people.
Yeah.
We have a limited number of volunteers this year doing taxes. So if anybody's interested in helping us next year, I hope you will come and give me your name and phone number or call K2 and ask him what my phone number is. This is Nora Laughlin. I'll give it right now. It's 321-0207.
And what are some of the, you've mentioned Social Security card, what are some of the other common kind of mistakes or things that people forget about or leave out that you know, could really help make it a little more efficient for people?
Thank you, Andy. You're good. One thing is you need a Social Security card for every person on your return. That means for the children, if your parents living with you, anybody you're going to claim as a dependent, we need to see their Social Security card as well. The ACA Marketplace has sent out a form to the people who bought health insurance through the Marketplace. They should have received a form 1095A. We do need to see that if you got your health insurance through Marketplace.
And I got one of those. I got something different this year, even though I'm not covered under ACA.
1095Bs and 1095Cs were sent out to people who, like me, have health insurance through, I'm retiree, through my old employer.
Yeah, or just through some other entity.
Or because I'm old, I get it
right.
through.
Sure, yeah.
Through the Medicare,
And so is that something that then,
You don't need to bring those.
You don't need to, okay.
If you have 1095B or C, it's your form, and anything you bring to us, it's your return, your responsibility, and we tell you what we need to see, and we don't need to see B or C.
Is there something out there that people maybe don't think about as either a credit or something that can maybe help them that you would say, hey, if you've got this in your life, you should think about that on taxes? Anything like that for folks?
Well, I can't think of anything right offhand, but I do. We can also help you. Maybe we have people come in that do not have enough withheld, so all of a sudden they have to write a check, and it surprises them because they didn't make that much money.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of how much money you make, if you don't have a certain amount of it withheld, and we can help you with that if you didn't, or other things you might do to help your taxes, or things you can expect if you have a child who's a dependent this year, they might not be that next year, so we can help mentally prepare you for that.
Sure, yeah.
As well. Well, it also is helpful if you bring last year's taxes with you. So.
Okay, that's a good tip. Yeah, that's a great tip to bring last year's form as well, and then you can make sure that you guys can compare those and make sure that people are still, you know, looking at the same things they claimed last year.
Yeah, and if I could have one more minute.
Sure.
We can also amend, if there's a need to amend 2015, 2014, 2013. Excuse me. No, that's right. We can only go back 3 years. But if we have people waiting to get their 2016 in and done, we will take them first. If no one's waiting for that, because you have 3 years to amend those returns. So.
Oh, okay.
But that's
great. It's happening at the Nugget Mall. It's at Suite 386, which is just inside of the middle entrance of the mall.
That's right, yep.
And it's Monday afternoons from 2 to 6 and Saturdays from 11 to 5. And as you said, this includes Monday, April 17th, because that's a holiday in D.C., but not here. But you guys will still be assisting people. And just a couple of things, remembering to bring the Social Security card, photo IDs, 2016 tax documents such as the W-2s and the 1099s and all that stuff, and also that ACA Marketplace Form 1095A for folks who bought health insurance through the ACA Marketplace. Nora Laughlin, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about this free tax assistance that you guys are putting together.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay, coming up next, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. There's no other sound along a stream or waterway quite like the reverberating metallic call of a belted kingfisher. As the showy crested kingfisher flies overhead, strong staccato wing beats and white wing patches flash a Morse code pattern. The bird's power is in its large head and sharp bill. The king of fishers hovers over water, then dives headfirst to catch its prey in its bill. Emerging from the water, the bird flies back to a perch. There it juggles the meal, usually a fish, frog, or crawdad, into position and gulps it down. At this time of year, the best places to see belted kingfishers are along sandy banks, where they're busy digging nesting burrows. These stocky, short-legged birds use their front claws, with two forward-pointing toes fused together for added strength, and their strong bills to dig holes. The holes typically reach 3 to 6 feet into the sandy bank, but some nesting holes can extend 15 feet. When not perching, fishing, or building a nesting burrow, the belted kingfisher dashes through the air, warning intruders with its rapid-fire call. You, too, can dig deeper and see a photo when you come to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
This is Paula Terrell from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. As part of 17 YOK, all sorts of groups are adopting specific weeks during which they do something to help spread kindness. This week's group is the Maritime District Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts. You can sign up for a week by emailing 17yok@junopolice.com. Together we can make Juneau a better place to live.
Got my back and I got you.
we're lucky like this. Just lucky like this. Spend my life looking for you. When our eyes met, we knew we're lucky like this. Just lucky like this.
Bit of the Lost Lakers there, and Tim and Karen Foote are with me in the studio right now. Thanks for coming in, both of you.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Glad to be here.
Down here from Fairbanks?
Yes.
Kind of, how long have you been up there?
33 years.
All right.
Who's counting?
So what did you move there together? Did you, okay,
yeah, we
so
did.
What brought you to Fairbanks?
Too many National Geographic specials,
no,
maybe.
That's why I'm in Juneau.
It was Tim, so long ago. But.
Tim grew up in Memphis, and he claimed as a kid he was just always so hot.
Yeah,
hot.
Right. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, I know. I moved here from Florida, so I get that. Yeah.
Oh, I'm from Florida.
Oh, okay. What
yeah.
part?
Fort Myers.
Same here. Fort Myers. Went to Cypress Lake High School.
I went to Fort Myers Senior High.
Okay. Well, that's a big rival.
We were rivals.
Okay.
But
all right.
Let's
okay.
try to get along with guys.
We'll be all right.
Take it down.
We'll be all right. But there you go.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
So that's funny because, I mean, that journey, we have a similar journey. We were 5,000 miles, right? Or you're
yes.
even further. And I do remember, you mentioned National Geographic, like when I was trying to find out what was going on with Juneau back in 1991 when I moved here.
Yeah.
I just found a National Geographic in the library, and that's the only pictures I had of Juneau, right? And some brochure that Casey sent me. So anyway, it's interesting to think about those days of coming up to this place. So when you got to Fairbanks, what did you find? I mean, did it meet all of your expectations, or was it? Or
oh, I think it was the last frontier for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a dog team for 16 years, and the whole deal. We're the Lost Lakers because we have a cabin, a dry cabin at Lost Lake.
Oh, okay.
And so that's where we go to unplug, uncharge, you know, recharge the batteries.
Right.
And
so,
a lot of our songs have sprung out of being at Lost Lake, you know,
mm-hmm.
multiple weekends
yeah, we write
and
there.
Weeks.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of them happen.
And you're there all different seasons?
All different
yeah.
seasons. Mm-hmm. And now it's great. Our kids, of course, bonded as children, and now they're taking their friends there. And there's a whole new generation of young Alaskans that are bonded with Lost Lake.
So. Yeah. A note on the back of the CD that we just heard from said all these songs were written, performed, one mic, one take, one day.
That's
was
right.
That it? Was that at the cabin or?
That was at the Roundhouse,
okay.
which Tim's parents, we moved them up from Memphis, and they lived right next door in a architecturally round house. It's wood and has a roof, but it's yurt, 16-sided. So it was great for recording.
A 16-sided wooden structure. Did you guys build it? Or?
No, but we had it refurbished. It was almost ready to fall down. It was a toss-up, really, whether to tear it down or rebuild it. And we just had this big leap of faith and had it rebuilt.
It was location, location. His parents
right.
were in their mid-80s. His father was a Southern Baptist preacher from Memphis. He literally married and buried half of Memphis. And we moved them up in their mid-80s and took care of them next door to us, and they were in the Roundhouse and lived to 92 and 93. Transplanted Alaskans, they loved it.
Clean living.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then once they passed, we kept it for making music. I have a garage band. We played there. Karen and I played there. We had house concerts there. There have been 3 records that were made there
yes.
because the acoustics were so good.
What mm-hmm. Tell me about the acoustics of that, how that round lends to.
Well, you know who gave us the idea was the show
Mountain Stage.
Oh, yeah.
They came to Fairbanks, and some of the guys ended up, they weren't sure what they were doing. We brought them home with us, and one of them was the sound engineer. And he walked into the Roundhouse and started snapping his fingers,
oh, cool.
clapping his hands, and saying, you've got to have house concerts here.
That's
he
really
said you should
cool.
rip this wall out.
And if you took this wall, we're like,
we're not going to rip a wall
out. We like two bedrooms.
But we started having house concerts there, and
it was great.
A lot of fun.
And then the bands could come up, and it's a two-bedroom, full bath, full kitchen house, so the bands could just stay there and have the house concert. And some of them, like Bobby Bear Jr., stayed for 5 days.
Wow, cool.
He loved it, you know.
So this house and the structure and this area
is right next door to our house.
Ended up being kind of a hub, little bit of a musical community happening up there.
Evan Phillips, who's with the Whipsaws, really loved it. Came several times. Tim Easton and Leroy Stagger, who's pretty big in Canada, loved the Roundhouse.
Yeah.
And Emma Hill has done several house concerts here. Lots of people, really. Now our daughter needed a place, and so that's come to a halt. And now our daughter is now in the Roundhouse. It seemed unfair for us to have a playhouse and family struggling.
Yes,
so
okay.
She's renting the Roundhouse.
There you go. Okay, well that's fine.
Yeah, but that's why the Roundhouse is where we did record and.
Yeah. Now, have you guys always been musicians? Did you kind of, and did you meet through music, or how did you guys meet?
We met kind of serendipitously.
Well, we met because I'm a pediatrician and I do allergy in Fairbanks. But when I was in my residency, I met a guy who was a medical student who is married to Karen's twin sister.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So that's how we met. And we sat down together, and I'm not kidding you, within 15 minutes of meeting each other, we were playing music together, and it just resonated.
And he started
singing
harmony with me, and my sister and brother-in-law were like, sounds like you guys have been playing together for 10 years.
That's cool.
Uncanny.
Yeah.
And now the guy I was dating and had brought that night, he was a little confused, too. And he said to me years later, I was never jealous at all dating you until the night you met Tim Foote. And I said, was I? He said, you were absolutely perfect. It was the energy.
Yeah.
It was the energy. Yeah. And so things kind of evolved.
Have sustained since then.
Yeah.
33 years.
And we have found that we enjoy writing songs together. And we write songs about our love. And about our losses and about the challenges of life that every family has. And it's just really helped us process and contend with life struggles if you can create artistic expression out of it. And typically we'll come up with something or I'll come up with something individually, and Karen is the closer, and she can pop out a song in 15 minutes. And if I'm not recording it and writing it down right away, it could be gone. And we know how ethereal and fleeting it can be, and we respect that. So.
He calls me the closer, and I call him my scribe, because I'll have a guitar, and lyrics just start tumbling out of me. And Tim knows enough he'll grab a pencil and just start writing down what I'm saying, because it's just, I call them tumblers. They just kind of tumble out.
I mean, that's a process that I've heard other musicians describe when, you know, they almost say, I'm not even writing it. It's just happening.
It is quite mysterious.
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
I don't either, to tell you the truth. I mean, I'll think about a song's going to come out of this, but then sometimes it just comes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Fascinating. Yeah. Do you have a musical kind of foundation or tradition that you come from? Is it bluegrass?
It's parlor music, would say. Wouldn't you, Karen?
Well, for me, I grew up with my folks. My mom loved Patsy Cline, George Jones, but Ray Charles, and my dad loved the Mills Brothers. We had a lot of music, and they would sing in the car. There were six kids, and a lot of singing in my house.
Of your other siblings also musicians? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the vast majority play guitar.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
And my tradition came from the church, from the Southern Baptist Church. And my mother would sing alto sitting right beside me, and I always like to think of her singing right in my ear because she was craning her neck around to see who wasn't there.
I want to play a little more music, but I also want to make sure that we mention where people can see you guys and listen to you guys. So you're playing tonight at the Folk Fest?
Yeah,
is that right?
Tenniel Hall, 7:30.
7:30, okay, great.
Then we're going to play at the Hangar in a new not at the bar, but apparently...
The ballroom? The Hangar Ballroom?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The listening room, they told us.
Okay.
I don't know, we haven't seen it.
Maybe that's different. Okay, that's different than the ballroom. All right, so over at the Hangar.
Over at the Hangar at 8:30.
At 8:30 tonight.
Yeah.
And then you're playing at the 360 Studios as well, right here at KTOO, and that's tomorrow...
At 5.
At 5. Okay, great. So a few different opportunities to hear you guys play. Can we play one more off of this CD?
Yeah.
What should we play next? We played Lucky Like That. That's the first track on At the Roundhouse. And
we are lucky like that, but we do want to play Far Away because this is a song that came out of someone we love very much getting caught up in the opiate addiction crisis. And she hid it real well from everyone and was arrested on the one-year anniversary of her beloved grandfather's death.
Mm.
And I said... From day one, that's no coincidence. That I think he could see what no one else could see, and he helped get that plug pulled and get you safe. And she mentioned that to her fiance's aunt, who's Alaska Native, and the auntie said, "She's right. In our culture, for one year, when someone's died, they are closer to us and can see us. And after 1 year, they have to move farther away."
Mm.
And so the song Far Away is really about both of them, the grandfather and the daughter, is now 5 years clean.
Oh, that's
thriving,
great. So there's a great, this is a sad song, but a great kind of...
Getting arrested was a blessing.
Yeah, okay. So Lost Lakers, this is from At the Roundhouse. They're playing tonight at the Folk Fest and then over at the Hangar, and then they're playing tomorrow at 5 o'clock here at the At 360 Studios. And this one is called Far Away. Lakers, and that's Karen and Tim Foote who've joined me. Karen and Tim, thanks so much for coming in and playing this great music and sharing a little bit of your story.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And you'll be able to see them tomorrow night here at 360 at 5 p.m. and also tonight at the Folk Festival at 7:30 and then later, a little later on, about 8:30 over at the Hangar. Thank you.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220...